The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
How are you, sir?
This is Pierre.
Oh.
I can't believe I'm talking to you, Dr. Ray the Great.
Well, I don't know about that.
I love listening to you. You have a personality just like my father.
I don't think you should feel helpless. You are helpless.
Doctor, I really appreciate that. That makes me feel a lot better.
You be at peace, or else I'm going to yell at you.
Trying to find a reason to speak to you. I think you're the best thing since sliced bread.
That Ray, he's something.
Thank you so much for what you're doing for all the parents out there.
They don't know what I can possibly do.
I don't either.
I'm getting my money worth, I think, at this phone call.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Not only the hometown, but she went to St. Anthony Parish, where I got my first communion. She had to go there. She was Italian. It was law. I remember when they used to say the masses, who they were for. Typically, this is interesting now. This shows to show you the changes. St. Anthony had 3 daily masses. Like they had something like a 6:30, a 7, and a 7:30, or something like that. Every day they had 3 daily masses. And when I was a little kid, all I heard was Italian names. There were never any name that wasn't Italian on who the mass was for and who was setting up the mass. Why? Why were they praying for this person via the mass? I just thought that's the way it was. For a while, I had a brief stint as an organ player for my parish at St. Anthony's. That ended rather abruptly when, at the end of one of the daily masses, I ended it with da, 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 my last amen. Then I went on the keyboard. Yeah, I thought I was pretty cool. Father didn't. No, he didn't do that. But I just decided ultimately I just wasn't getting up too well at 6 o'clock for Mass every day. Okay, enough of that tabotinage. This is Look Back Friday on The Doctor Is In. Look Back Friday is where we take previous calls from previous programs, going back sometimes 3-4 months. There's something about the call that I would want to comment more about, something about the call that taps into a much broader general issue that could be addressed, something about the call that I wanted to go in a different direction, but I couldn't because the caller was clearly asking something specific, and for me to go off on a tangent with them would just not answer what they were asking. So those are all very altruistic reasons for a call-making Look Back Friday. But if we shed the altruism and get to the realism, it's just I just want to talk more. Pretty much that straightforward. I got more to say. I didn't get to say enough. So the calls are sitting up there. I'm watching them. Andrew Kruchek, producer man, he edits them. And we will get to those momentarily. When I was in grad school, we had to take psychometric courses. And these are courses where you study test design. How you put together a test, how you get validity for the test, does it measure what it's supposed to measure, what are you going after in fact. Now, this is a test that I kind of disagreed with my prof, because I thought it was a rather targeted test. I think it made a statement, and I think it was called the manliness test. That you could measure your level of manliness on the basis of how you responded to certain hypothetical scenarios. And there were correct answers, and the correct answer for the manliness test was always C. So I'll show you what I mean. First scenario. Alien beings from a highly advanced society visit the Earth. You are the first human they encounter. As a token of intergalactic friendship, They present you with a small but incredibly sophisticated device that is capable of curing all disease, providing an infinite supply of clean energy, wiping out poverty, and permanently eliminating oppression and violence over the entire earth. You decide to, A, present it to the President of the United States. B, present it to the Pope. C, take it apart. As you grow older, what lost quality of your youth do you miss the most? A, innocence. B, idealism. C, cherry bombs. Let's get into the social sphere here. You've been seeing a woman for several years. She's attractive and intelligent. You always enjoy her company. One leisurely Sunday afternoon, the two of you are taking it easy. You're watching a football game. She's reading the newspaper when suddenly out of the blue, she tells you she thinks she really loves you. But she can no longer bear the uncertainty of not knowing where your relationship is going. She says she's not asking whether you want to get married, only whether you believe that you have some kind of future together. What do you say? A, you sincerely believe the two of you do have a future, but you don't want to rush it. B, although you have strong feelings for her also, you cannot say honestly that you'll be ready anytime soon to make a lasting commitment, and you don't want to hurt her by holding out false hope. Or C, you cannot believe the Broncos called a draw play on 3rd and 17. Okay, scenario number 4. You've decided that you truly love a woman and you want to spend the rest of your life with her, sharing the joys and the sorrows that the world has to offer, come what may. How do you tell her? A, you take her to a nice restaurant. Tell her after dinner. B, take her for a walk on a moonlit beach. You say her name, and when she turns to you with the sea breeze blowing through her hair and the stars in your eyes, you tell her. C, tell her what? One weekday morning, your wife wakes up feeling ill and asks you to get your 3 children ready for school. Your first question to her is, A, do they need to eat or anything? B, they're enrolled in school already? C, there are 3 of them, right? And the last one here. What, in your opinion, is the most reasonable explanation for the fact that Moses led the Israelites all over the place for 40 years before they finally got to the promised land? A, he was being tested. B, he wanted them to really appreciate the promised land when they finally got there. C, he refused to ask for directions. Well, I turned that test in to my prof, and I don't think she liked it. I don't know if that was just kind of her prejudice. Look, I thought it was a very well-constructed test. I think it pretty much established level of guyness, you know, if you look at it that way. I did buy one of those GPS. I bought a really cheap one. I bought the cheapest one I could find. It has a woman's voice, and she just basically tells you to pull over and ask somebody for directions. Yeah. Well, speaking of commitment, my wife thought that when we were dating that I was being very slow to commit. Thought I was dragging my feet. So 2 years into the relationship, she gives me an ultimatum. She says, you either tell me your name or it's over. When we come back, we're going to talk to Mary from Virginia, who cannot see. Well, who? Let me rephrase that. Who isn't allowed to see her grandchild. I'm Dr. Ray.
When your children consider going to college, where are you going to find a place that will prepare them for the future and build on the foundation that you've laid? The answer? Ave Maria University. With an authentically Catholic curriculum, including 35 majors, AMU prepares students to take on the world.
I've seen the difference in my son since he's been at Ave Maria. He's happy, he's excited about what he's going to do with his degree, and he's living his faith.
Learn more at avemaria.edu. That's avemaria.edu.
Hello, Steve Ray here. We're going to Normandy, France in November to celebrate the 80th anniversary of D-Day. We'll also be in Paris for the opening of the resurrected Notre Dame Cathedral. Join us on a pilgrimage of discovery through the saints and shrines of France. Catherine Laborier and the Miraculous Medal, St. Therese of Lisieux, the Incorrupt Body of Vincent de Paul, a dinner cruise through Paris on the Seine River, and so much more.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Have you ever been so grief-stricken and so heartsick that you can't see God? You can't see God in the tragedy? You can't see God in that cross? You can't see God in that sickness? Why? You're enveloped in that grief. You're enveloped in fear. And God is out the window. You don't see Him standing right next to you.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria, Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at avemaria.com. That's avemaria.com.
Thank you for joining me here. Dr. Ray Garrity, program doctors in variant of the program. Look back Friday. So our first call is from Mary, looking back on Mary, who is in a position, sadly, I'm going to use the word tragically, that many grandparents are in, which is they have been cut off, severed from seeing grandkids. Now, I've gotten emails where people have said, yeah, Ray, but wait a minute. Doesn't always go in that direction. Sometimes the parents, the grandparents have to be cut off because of, and I recognize that. There are certainly times. My experience has been for those grandparents who are faith-filled, basically decent people, more often than not, it is the young adults who are cutting them off for, sadly, reasons that are certainly not legitimate for severing them from their grandchildren. So let's see what's going on with Mary.
We had a conversation a few days ago, and basically our son feels offended by my husband's approach. My husband has had some verbal altercation. Like, he gets angry and he says things because he thinks that he deserves more respect, and my kids think that they also deserve respect. They're all adults, my kids, but so they won't let us see the grandbaby. That's the bottom line.
How old's the grandbaby?
So she's just a month and a half, probably 2 months old.
So prior to this,
we finally saw her when she was born. Sorry?
Mary, prior to this, when they didn't have a grandbaby to say you can't see the grandbaby, how did they stay away from you? Did they say we don't want you in our lives?
No, they even stayed with us for a few weeks because the hospital was close to where we live, and they live farther away. So it was a great relationship, and so we are in shock, and it's been very sad, you know, the past few weeks, you know, the conversations we have with him. He says he gets along better with a family of his wife, and that we should respect that. And then it's going to take them a while to come around and to give them space. they didn't want us to come to the hospital, even though they were staying with us at the time. But when they needed, like, economic support, we're there for them. So there was no problem there. You know what I'm saying?
Well, hey, not going to be any problem when you're giving people money. He's a psychologist? He's a psychologist? Is that right?
Yes.
Is he a Christian?
Oh, yeah. We're all Catholic, very Catholic. So that's the other part. We never thought in a million years that we of our kids this was going to happen, you know. So it's very, very sad and very complex, I guess. I don't know.
So he thinks that his father is a pain in the butt, and he just figures it's better not to be around him all that much.
Yeah, I think so. I think he has some resentment, you know.
How far back do these resentments go?
He says it's been for many years. Mm-hmm. So this is the way he's letting us know to stay apart until we change or until my husband changes towards him or something.
And your husband's not about to do that, is he?
He finally did it a few days ago. And he called him on the phone and he was able to apologize to him. But my husband wanted to keep going and saying other things that he wanted to. But I said, just stop right there and just let him, you know, process what you just said and give them time, you know, to heal and to come to peace. So it was very hard for my husband to do it, but he did. And I was
I'm impressed.
My goodness, so
Mary, I'm impressed. Yes. I got to respect him for doing that, because I was going to say, if he can do it, then he probably should apologize for his part of the problem. You know, obviously, you think that your son has part of the problem, too, and who knows the influence his wife is having. But given given all that, your husband did a beautiful thing. He went and said, for my part, I'm sorry. Did that soften your son at all?
Well, we haven't spoken since. But the sad thing is that we haven't been able to see the grandchild. So that's the part that I'm struggling with. I mean, I love them. I respect them. I don't want them to say, okay, my mother-in-law or my mom did or said this. And that's why we're having trouble in our marriage. Or you know what? Because they've just been married for a couple of years.
Ask your son one question.
Mm-hmm.
What will have to be different for us to be able to see that little grandbaby? Ask him.
We have tried to ask him, but he won't tell us directly. He just says that the family on the other side has been nicer to them, that has been very loving, that they get along very well, and the wife feels better with them than with us. And then
ask him this, Mary. Mary, ask him this. Yeah. Say, okay, they're easier to get along with than we are. We accept that. Does that mean that we shouldn't be allowed to see the baby just because they're easier to get along with than we are?
Yes,
are we that hard to get along with? Ask them.
Yeah, I think that's what his logic is behind all this. And, you know, during the baptism, we were only invited, us, the parents and the godparents, and they didn't even allow me to touch the baby. I tried to touch, like, her foot with my finger. And then he said, don't touch her, you know.
Mary, here's the problem. Here's the problem I have. I have no idea what you, or mostly your husband, as you say it, act like toward your son and your daughter-in-law. I have no idea. I'm sure you believe that you're not offensive. But if...
He says he gets along better with me than with his dad, but I mean...
Okay.
I don't want to take sides, you know.
Well, I would ask him this, because first of all, we're not going to. If you're asking me how to change your son's thinking, I can't do that.
Yeah, I know.
Have your husband. It sounds like he did a great thing and apologized. Have him go to your son and say, "Don't punish mom. If you have the problem with me and you don't want me around, I can't do anything about that. But don't punish mom. Let mom see the baby at least." Maybe your son will soften on that one, and then when he softens on that one, eventually you'll both be back in their lives. Number of comments here in Mary's situation. I asked the question, how far back did those resentments go? And the son said, years. This often happens. Someone is silently building up a pile of resentments. And they don't express them. They don't come out with them. They just stew. And then there's usually an event. According to Mary, this last one was the husband got upset because he wasn't getting respected, wasn't getting his due. It might have been an ugly scene. And they said, that's it. And perhaps the biggest way they could punish was say, you can't see the child. So that's not unusual. People say, holy mackerel, that wasn't a big enough deal. Yeah, I got that. But gee, to wipe us out of our grandchild's life on the basis of that? Well, unfortunately, it wasn't on the basis of that. It was something that had been brewing for a long time. And I know that if I talked to Mary at any length, I'd start to find out, oh, yeah, when he was 16, this happened. When he was 19, this happened. When he was 23, we got into this. Yes, I would not be surprised at all to see that. Now, it's interesting the condition that the son put on this. Dad has to change. See, that's one of those trait talk things, which is you gotta be different than you are. Now, one can say, well, yeah, he should be different. He shouldn't be upset and angry, questioning their parenting or how they treat him. Okay. But to say, Dad, you need to totally alter your personality in line with what we want, or you're not going to be around our child. Wow. How do you meet that one? Because you're going to have slip-ups. You're not going to be able to say, okay, I will never, ever, ever get upset or say things I shouldn't say or even get angry. Yeah, no, it's not going to happen. I will totally change. Dad did something that I've recommended in my grandparenting book. As a grandparent, when you are severed, maybe from your adult children's lives or from your grandchildren, one of the things you can do is you got to do damage control. You got to call, you got to apologize. And you have to apologize for your role. You may think to yourself, my gosh, I didn't do that much wrong. For heaven's sakes, all I did was just say X. I meant nothing by it. And they took it so wrong, and they ran with it. Yes, I understand that. But if you get caught up in the idea that, wait a minute, you need to understand where I'm coming from, you may not get satisfaction on that. If you can apologize without giving justification. See, Mary said that her husband, after his apology, started to say things about either why they did what they did that caused him to do what he did, or why he did what he did, or how he was justified in doing what he did, and she tried to stop him because she's absolutely right. You give an apology, it's unconditional. You don't say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say that, and I'm so sorry because I could see now how it could be misinterpreted. But you know, there's times when, oh, once you start that, you've opened up just another course of argument. Now, the reason I was so impressed with Dad is because that's hard to do, to go and apologize when you don't think you're that wrong, or you don't think you deserve the kind of consequence that they're putting on you for what you did. Yeah, okay, I was wrong, but wrong enough to not see my grandchild? That's a key. But then there was one other thing they said. And that was, his wife really likes to be around her family a lot more because they're nicer. Back in the beginning, I said, why is it? Is there some influence on the wife's part? And all too often, there is influence on the spouse's part to say, I don't really like your parents. And their tolerance level for their in-laws is less than the tolerance level for the spouse whose parents it is.
Can a priest ever reveal what he has heard in confession? No, he cannot, the Catechism firmly states. Due to the delicacy and greatness of this ministry and the respect due to persons, the Church declares that the priest must keep all he hears under the seal of the sacrament. Under no circumstances may he disclose what he has heard in confession. Were he to do so, he would face severe church penalties. When he is celebrating the sacrament of penance, the priest is fulfilling the ministry of the Good Shepherd seeking the lost sheep, the Good Samaritan who binds up the wounds, the merciful Father who welcomes home the prodigal son, and the impartial judge whose judgment is just and merciful. The confessor is the servant, not the master of God's forgiveness, leading the penitent to maturity and healing. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
The Heart of the Interior Life with Elizabeth Jingle.
In the third rule of the Discernment of Spirits, the first description St. Ignatius of Loyola gives to teach about spiritual consolation describes a soul being inflamed with the love of God. He writes, "I call it consolation when some interior movement is caused in the soul through which the soul comes to be inflamed with love of its Creator and Lord." What is this inflaming of the soul that Ignatius is speaking about? St. Ignatius is describing any warming of the heart that brings with it an increase in the love of God that we experience within our interior spiritual experience. Feelings of warming and uplift of heart with love for God. The duration and intensity of this inflaming, as with all gifts of spiritual consolation, varies and leaves its blessing. Let us open our hearts to God's gift of spiritual consolation and welcome the blessing it brings.
For more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.
I did it. I got one of those jobs. My wife said, "Ray, what kind of job do you really want to have?" When we got married, I said, "I want to get one of those jobs where people ask, do you actually get paid for doing this?" Yeah, I do. I get paid for being with you guys. Somebody will come up to me and talk and say, "Thank you for what you do." And I'll go, "I get paid. They pay me." So that, of course, wipes out any reward I might get. All right, this is Look Back Friday on The Doctor Is In. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. It's a co-production of the EWTN, Global Catholic Radio Network, big monster network, 500-plus stations worldwide. Sirius Satellite, Channel 130, and plus all the apps and streamings and all the many, many, many ways you can hear Catholic media and Ave Maria Radio Communications. And right now, my producer man and editor, Andrew Kruczek, I've been with him for 20-plus years now. Yeah, he started when he was in kindergarten. I started when I was in high school. So we're doing a Look Back Friday. Let's go with Vince. His wife really has some trust problems because of her previous marriage.
My wife experienced betrayal in her first marriage, and she mentioned that to me. And I was wondering, is there any kind of behavioral expressions from a person that experienced betrayal?
Has your wife said anything that would make you think that she's wary that you'll do the same thing?
Oh, yeah, 100%. It's one of our biggest challenges.
What exactly does she look for?
One of the issues, and I'm going to, "Oh, why did you go to the store?" "To buy groceries." "Who'd you see there?" And then it just explodes.
How long you been married?
7 years.
And for
first 2 years was great, and the last 5 has just been getting worse and worse.
Well, you would probably say that you've not given her any reason in the last 5 years. As a matter of fact, you've probably been more trustworthy. Is that true?
100%, yes.
How does she explain that she's getting more suspicious?
It's just getting ramped up. It's on just about anything and everything at any time. There's no break. It's suspicious I'm suspicious and who I'm talking to. Why are we sitting here in church? Are you wanting to see this person over there? Why are we going there to the game tonight? Is there somebody you want to see?
Well, the first thing I would suggest, Vince, is don't fight her about it. Why are we sitting here? You want to look at that girl over there? No. And that's it. Don't get in the car and say, why do you even think that in church? What is it? I go to church and already I'm trying to pray and you're accusing me of looking at some girl. What are you doing? Watch that. That's not going to work.
Yeah, it's too late. I've been doing a lot of that.
I know you have. So you might want to give it up.
Very good.
Now, second thing. This is a little more risky. And this is something that I often tell clients who come in and their marriage is struggling because of this suspicion. For example, it oftentimes happens after somebody's had an adulterous relationship and they've wanted to reconcile in the marriage and they're trying to heal the marriage and both partners want to heal the marriage. And the aggrieved partner is suspicious, continuously suspicious. And it's been going on and on and on and on. And it's been something that has really dramatically slowed down the healing process. I will say this. You know that if he or she wanted to do something behind your back, you couldn't stop it. Do you understand that? Do you understand that no matter how much you check the phone, no matter how much you ask where they've been, no matter how much you use a stopwatch to see how long it takes to go to the grocery store and back, that if they want to do something like this again, you cannot be all places at all time. Now, I don't know if you want to try that with your wife, but it's kind of like saying, you have to trust me, because if I were what you say I am, which I'm not, you couldn't do anything about it anyway. Now, the danger in that is she could say, well, that's exactly right. So maybe we should just end it right now. I hope that wouldn't happen. But that is one thing you could try. The other thing is, do not argue with her anymore. Do not defend yourself anymore. Well, you said you were going to the post office. Why'd you go to the grocery store? I had to pick up a few things. Why do you do that? Why don't you go where you say you're going to go? I had to pick up a few things. What were those things? I don't think we need to get into that. I don't want to fight. I really would try to avoid those. If they were in my office, I would ask the wife, what has happened in the last years to make you more suspicious? I would want her to say either nothing, it's me, or, well, yes, there's been a couple of situations that he wouldn't explain and I didn't understand. What were those? Then I would say to him, can you explain those to her? And then I would, before he explained it, I would say to her, if he explains this, will you believe him? And if she says what many say, I don't know, I would say, well, if you don't believe him, then what are you saying? How will you establish that he's telling you the truth or not? It's kind of like, I'm sorry, no, you're not. See, once you say, I don't believe you, you're done. There's just no way that we can go any further. You've essentially said, what I've told you is not the truth, and therefore, no matter what you say now, it's deceptive. So I'd really want to get to, and I didn't get a chance to talk to Vince about this, I'd really want to get to, tell me what it is that is making you doubt my faithfulness. And she may say something like, well, it's not your faithfulness. It's just the fact that I just worry that you're going to get attracted to somebody else. That's probably more what it is. And he probably would have to say something like, I'm not going to do that. And you're going to have to accept that or you're going to be miserable. because there is no way that I can soothe every one of your doubts. There's too many. I can't even anticipate what they might be. You're going to be forced to accept that you have to trust me. Otherwise, you'll just make yourself miserable in our marriage.
With Teresa Tomeo.
No one sees a face of abortion, you know, in particular, because it's hidden by semantics, it's hidden by words, it's hidden by phrases, and, you know, and these grandiose claims of, oh, we're, you know, it's all about reproductive rights and the women, and women shouldn't be, you know, forced to carry a baby to term, especially if they were victims of rape or incest. So you put all of these ideas in people's heads that this is all about the good of a woman, but not looking at the people involved, the baby, and of course, you know, for example, a woman who we know from research, Dr. David Reardon has done a lot of research on this area, that women who do conceive through rape and carry the baby to term and either keep the child or place it up for adoption are much better off mentally. Mental health, they can deal with that, they can heal much more quickly, because two wrongs definitely don't make a right.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Saint Jose Maria Escriva says that we are called to light up the pathways of this earth by being sowers of peace and joy. This comes from being aware that we are sons and daughters of God. On the road of life, though, we find dangers, but God walks with us every step of our life, pouring out the gifts of His Holy Spirit upon us. Our Lady is our companion, like GPS in our car, connected to the cloud and bringing the latest updates to help us navigate our journey and get out of traffic on the way to the eternal kingdom. We don't want to get into family fights on our way to God's vacation destination, but we should be the sowers of peace and joy. We shouldn't accept substitutes, accept only the authentic identity of being His children, His sons and daughters. Let's grow in happiness and bring peace to those around us. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
Thank you for joining me here. Let me just give you a... I'll give you just a C.S. Lewis, Clives Staples Lewis. It is the second coming of Christ that is the medicine our condition especially needs. Can you imagine? I mean, as the world becomes more chaotic and as it becomes more connected through technology, can you just imagine what it would be like when Christ returns? Oh my. I mean, obviously he'd have to be seen by everybody all at the same time. Don't know how he'd work that one out, but no doubt that he could. But I think about that. It's like, whoa. And he said, he'll return when you least expect it. You know, people say that he was a good man. And I say, no, good men don't talk like that. Good men don't talk like they're going to come back at the end of the world. And then the only counterpart to that is, well, he didn't say that, his apostles said it. Then you have to ask the question, why would they say it? What for? What's the purpose? Hold him up as God so they could all be persecuted? Thrown out of the synagogues? Just see, no matter how far you chase it, it doesn't make any sense. Unless you say he must be who he said he is. Minerva's calling from Washington about her son. What happened? I'm so sorry to hear this. How did that happen?
Well, he was battling with cancer 4 years ago. He started with leukemia, and then he just kept going and going. After the leukemia, he developed lymphoma, and he got all kinds of infections. So it was all over 4 years. So this year, he went into bone marrow transplant, and everything was going good. But, you know, before the 100 days, he started getting sick, and he catch a real bad bacteria in the hospital. And it damaged his lungs very bad. So that's what it caused him to die on the 26th of last month.
It is so fresh for you.
Yes. And I don't know, but it's very painful right now.
I can't even imagine, Minerva. I cannot even imagine.
And besides that, he was my only son. I mean, he was my only son, and now I feel lost.
Do you have any kind of guilt over your son in the way that you raised him, or maybe second guessing yourself and saying, I could have done more? Okay, good. Because that will just make this so much more painful.
No, I don't feel guilty of anything, because I always was with him. I had to quit my job to be with him every day. And, you know, that between these 4 years, it was time where he was out of the hospital, and we have we spent time together. Sometimes I got to work, but he was okay with that. So I guess we were keep just going back and forth at the hospital, so I didn't have too much time to work in between these years. So that's why I don't feel guilty of anything.
Good. I've seen parents who have lost children, and their agony is worse because they second guess what they could have done differently. So I'm glad to hear that from you. Here's what I would say. It's safe to say that grief, especially grief from the loss of a very, very close loved one, is the most powerful emotion that anybody can experience. And it is stronger than anything you would have anticipated. It knocks you off your feet completely. So what you're feeling is very normal, and it will probably be quite intense for some time. I always tell folks, 1 year at least. There really are no rules. You can cry at any time. Anything can remind you of your loved one, your son. You can get up in the morning and remember, oh yes, my son is not here. And you got peace with sleep, if you could sleep, and you got some peace, but then when you woke up, the reality hit you. And you put one foot in front of the other, and you realize, I'm not taking any joy in anything. And that's okay. Much of what you do is just kind of automatic pilot. You go to the grocery store and you buy food, and that's it. And you see young people at church, and you look at them and you say, don't you understand what you have? You have your son. You have your children. Please, please appreciate what you have. All of that, dear. You will. Here's the good news. There will come a day when the pain is not so sharp, where it will settle into kind of a dull love and missing of your son. That may be a year, it may be 2 years, who knows? But that day will come. There will come a day, the first time you laugh, you'll think, I feel guilty for laughing. I'm not supposed to laugh. I lost my son. What, is this not bothering me anymore? No, no, no. It will be good for you to laugh again. Do you have confidence and faith that your son had a wonderful relationship with our Lord?
Yes. Yes, he was. And you know, the last days that the doctor told us that he was not going to make it, I talked to him and I told him, well, what do you think about it? And, he was the hope that he had the hope that he was going to make it, because last year the doctors told us the same, that he was not going to make it, but he did. And he was hoping on the same thing, because he said, well, we're not in control of anything. God is in control of everything. And he has a plan.
I had a lady in my office. Her 7-year-old son died in a 4-wheeler accident. I think the older brother was driving. They hit something and the 7-year-old went over top of the 4-wheeler, landed on his head. The mother talked about, well, I won't say how she described people. It's not coarse or anything impure, but it was a harsh word about people who would say things supposedly trying to comfort her, like, it all works out for the best. God must have wanted another angel. You have other children. And those kinds of things just, oh, she was shocked, absolutely shocked at those remarks. And I asked her, I said, what kinds of things would people say or do that were at least somewhat comforting to you? And she said, they just said, I'm so very sorry. I'm so very, very sorry. Or they would hug us. Because there isn't much you can say. One of the worst things to say is, I can imagine how you feel. And her first thought was, no, you can't. No, you can't. Don't say that. C.S. Lewis wrote a book called A Grief Observed. And in the book, he had been a confirmed bachelor for many years. And he married this woman. And they had, I think, been married for 4 years. And she passed away, forget from what. And he talked about his agony. He said grief was kind of like a deep, deep hunger. The feeling, the pangs of hunger, very deep in you, kind of like a gut-level emptiness. That's the way Lewis described it. And there for a while, some years back, I had a number of parents who came to the office because they had lost children, one from an accident when he was 17, another one from a boating accident, another one from an illness. And you see that they got knocked over. They just got knocked over. They had never experienced anything like that, anything similar. So I guess I tell them about the one thing you can do is you just simply begin to live life as best you can at this point, knowing that most of the time, not all the time, I've seen people live in agony for years and years and years and years, but most of the time, the level of agony does drop. Doesn't seem like it will, like it ever will, but at some point, it releases its strangling grip. And then, once again, there is a certain level of peaceful reemergence into the flow of life. I'm Dr. Ray.
Anybody who goes to a psychoanalyst ought to have his head examined. So let's examine ours.
I'll send you my consultation fee.
The doctor is in.
The doctor is in.
The doctor will be with you in just a moment.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs?
If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Maybe you've been hearing a lot about the need to make a spiritual communion while participating from home in a live-streamed or broadcast Mass. Maybe you've even prayed the prayer of spiritual communion. Spiritual communion is a concept that goes all the way back to the 4th century. It flourished in the Eastern Church and gradually moved west. Spiritual communion stresses the transcendence of God, where we unite our desires, intentions, and loves with the holy sacrifice of the Mass and the consecration of the Eucharist at the altar. Jesus, I embrace you and unite myself wholly to you.
Italy aficionado Teresa Tomeo's newest book is now out on the Ave Maria online store. In Italy's shrines and wonders, Teresa Tomeo provides how best to navigate the most popular sites, best routes, and how the best to soak in all the beauty Italy has to offer. She also shares the most inspiring journeys to make your Italy excursion utterly unforgettable. Italy's shrines and wonders from Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo, can be purchased at AveMariaRadio.net.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
Who's one?
Teresa.
What? I don't even think she's 100% Italian.
That's a good one, though, Andrew, right there. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Website, drray.com, D-R-R-A-Y.com. All 17 books are there. New book coming out. It's about narcissism. It's a book on narcissism. Yeah, it's all about me. It's all about me. Okie doke. I don't have time for another call, but some weeks ago we had a call from a guy who was struggling with the golden rule. And he interpreted it as, how can I treat others with love when I don't love myself? And I asked him, did he believe that God loved him? And he was in doubt about that. And his view, of course, is that, well, I have a lot of failings. I have a lot of sinfulness. I fall short, so I can't see. Well, he didn't say I can't see. He said, I can't feel. And as soon as you hear that word, when you hear that word, you know that can be a real misleading perception. Can't feel how God would love me. Well, I came across this. And I spoke with him, and I talked to him about how God is love, and clearly Christ, of all quote-unquote religious leaders, emphasized love far more than anybody. I mean, it was the very center of his teaching in so many ways. You want to go back, and you want to look at how our Lord talked about love everywhere, from every angle. Well, this is from C.S. Lewis. God loves us not because we are lovable, but because he is love. Not because he needs to receive, but because he delights to give. So Lewis saying, look, it's not dependent on us here. God's not going to love the saints in heaven, the capital S saints, more than he loves you. He's infinite love. So you can't build on infinite love. But that's real hard for us to wrap our head around, because our love is so often conditional. And it ebbs and flows on the basis of what somebody else is like or what they do. So it's hard for us to wrap our head around that kind of love. We just got to take God's word for it. You can't feel it. You can't say, well, I just feel that I'm unconditionally loved. That's a little harder. You just got to believe it. Because he says so. Because Christ says so. What I feel about it is irrelevant. Thank you so very much for joining me here on The Doctor Is In on this Look Back Friday. Good Lord permitting, talk to you Monday on E-Person Monday. Appreciate very much your company. Walk with God. He wants to walk with you all the time.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.